This is A Wee Bit of Everything, the podcast that explores all things sport and teaching.
Hello there, and welcome to the A Wee Bit of Everything podcast with your hosts, Lewis and Clark. Thanks for coming back to tune into this week's episode. We really are amazed by all the support we have received from everyone so far. Our partner of the podcast is Premiership Experience, who have played a big role in helping us develop. Premiership Experience offer fantastic sports tours within the UK and abroad, so be sure to check them out on Twitter at Prem Experience.
This is a professional learning platform where we get ideas and insights from like-minded professionals. Our vision is to inspire, to teach, and to entertain. So let's get started with this week's episode of A Wee Bit of Everything.
Hello everybody and welcome back to this week's episode of the A Wee Bit of Everything podcast, where this week we're joined by Sam Strickland to share his expertise in behaviour management. So Sam is currently a head teacher at Dustin High School, which is in Northampton. He's also the author of a few books, namely Education Exposed 1 and 2, and he's recently published the Behaviour Manual book, which we will hear all about shortly in tonight's episode. So Clark, do you want to give us a wee lowdown on the kind of questions we're going to be asking before we get into the podcast?
Yeah, Sam, as Lewis said, is a head teacher, so we're going to get his views and experiences around behaviour management in schools throughout his career. We're going to talk a bit about how behaviour is communication, and trying to meet the kind of needs of the young people and ways that we can go about that on a day-to-day basis. We're going to talk about pupils who come from disadvantaged background and the behaviours that they might display, which can be distress behaviours. We're going to talk a wee bit about scripting your responses to minimise disruption in your lessons and go through a few practical examples, and then we'll talk a bit about common advice that's out there which people should ignore, and then Lewis will finish off with the quickfire round. So yeah, we've got a lot in store tonight. I'm looking forward to getting Sam on. It's been a while since we've tried to organise it, so yeah, let's get him on. How are you doing, Sam? Thanks very much for coming on to the podcast. How's your day been?
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a really busy day. We start our school day with school lineups, and we're an all-through school, so I've delivered an assembly to the primary phase of the school. And at the moment, I'm doing staff one-to-ones with all my staffing body. So it's been a fairly full-on day, and throwing a couple of SLT meetings and VP meetings in there as well. And then the usual kind of normal routine stuff. So it's, yeah, been busy, but been fun.
Yeah, I'm sure that's been a quick day then with everything that's gone on.
Yeah, every day's like that.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Well, we're looking forward to getting your views and experience around behaviour management in particular in schools. But before we get onto that, would you be able to give us and the listeners a little background information on your career to date?
Yeah, no. I mean, I started out longer than I care to think now as a history trainee under Christine Council at the University of Cambridge. The first school I worked in was an upper school. So started in year 9, went through to year 13. And in theory, started out as an NQT, as a history teacher. I actually taught 8 different subjects to the old A2 standard as an NQT. And in my second year of teaching, taught 7 different subjects. Wow. So I've taught PE, politics, history, classics, geography, business studies, economics, ABC, leisure and tourism, RE. I can go on and on and on. I can almost say what I haven't taught as opposed to what I have, which is great. And yes, it's made me a far more rounded practitioner, I guess. But in that school, I worked my way up to be a head of history. I was put in charge of classics. I was a lead practitioner for teaching and learning, and I worked on the North Bed Skit Consortium as a skit mentor for history trainee teachers, which is a fantastic experience.
What does that involve, skit mentoring?
Yeah, so it was mentoring trainee teachers effectively in how to be a history teacher. So it's thinking about the subject knowledge side, but then also the enacted side of actually being in a classroom and teaching. So it's kind of subject lectures in effect. Okay. To half a dozen people, and then going and observing them teach in their own placement setting. But then I moved from that school to be an assistant head teacher in an all-girls school as a director of sixth form, and I was in charge of a consortium arrangement with 2 other schools within the town that school was in. And I did that job for nearly 5 years, and it was a fantastic experience, completely different experience to the one at the mixed school. I then moved on to be a vice principal at an outstanding school and a flagship school within a trust. And I was in charge of student care, safeguarding, behaviour, pastoral care. I was then put in charge of the sixth form. So for the second time in my career, I got that sixth form kind of tacked and spin on again. School improvement, CEF writing. I was dispatched to work within a free school within that trust to help them get their first ever set of GCSE results. And I was made associate principal of that outstanding flagship school. And in my time in that school, I delivered on a lot of the MPQs nationally. So MPQML, MPQSL, and MPQH. And then I moved on to the Dustin School, which is where I am now, a substantive principal in April of 2017, which is a large all-through school. So it starts in early years, it goes all the way through to post-16. But again, delivered during my time at the school, nationally on the MPQs. We're a national behaviour hub lead school. So we do a lot of outreach work to other schools and supportive work. We're also the home of Research Ed Northampton. I serve as a trustee on a trust board of another trust, and I've got To My Name and For My Sins, three books to my name. So that's my career in a nutshell.
That was a really quick whistle stop tour, but you've been a busy man, been involved in a lot of, you know, whole school developments, and I think behaviour is something that you've focused in on then, and I take it through your books that you've been writing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's something I'm really passionate about, because I think it makes a fundamental difference ultimately to how schools work.
100%, definitely. Couldn't agree more with that. Well, kind of on that then, so I know there's a lot of phrases that are going around just now on online and in training within schools. One that I've heard is all behaviour is communication. Is this something that, or do you agree with this, and or is this something that's, you know, maybe getting said a bit too much, or would you say that this is something that you agree with?
Yeah, I think it's one of these sort of Twitter sound bites, isn't it? All behaviour is communication. Is it? It might be. I don't want to refute the statement fully and say that, you know, some behaviour isn't trying to communicate something. That may well be the case, but I think that we're often trying, and I'm not, when I say we, I don't mean everybody, but yeah. I think there's often a degree of trying to kind of come up with a rational reasoning or rationale as to why a certain behaviour has happened. And sometimes, absolutely. And I think it's our job, don't get me wrong, as teachers, as school leaders, as pastoral leaders, whatever your role might be, to investigate why a pupil has done what they've done. To argue that every single behaviour is communicating something, I think, is actually almost to oversimplify it. And I know what I'm now going to say you could think, well, isn't this just a simplification? But if we rewind to when we were kids, when we were 11, 12, 13, you know, walking down the corridor, pushing your mates, and you shouldn't be doing that. You should be walking sensibly. It's because you're larking around and basically being a bit of a plonker, you know, and trying to get a ruse or a rise or a bit of a laugh out your friends, or certain things that we would have done as kids were just developmental. It's because if we're growing and we're evolving and we're developing, we don't really understand fully that that's right or wrong. Or we do, but we just want to see what happens.
Yeah.
Actually, you're not really thinking about the consequences. You're just thinking in the here and now about impressing everybody, or you're just doing it because you're just doing it because it's your age. I think there is a degree, if I simplify it again, really, of it's kids being kids.
And yeah, even just be like showing off in front of like other peers, things like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But I'm thinking back to when I was at school, not necessarily like I've had a traumatic upbringing or anything like that, or that type of stuff.
No, I mean, I'm not trying to refute the claim. There will no doubt be some behaviour that is a form of communication where children are looking for attention from adults for whatever reason. And yes, that does happen, but I don't think that's the only, you know, the only factor with behaviour. So I think it's a phrase, to my mind, that we should use with caution, rather than we should, you know, blanket everything as it's a form of communication.
Yeah, because I think from the training I've been on, it was like all behaviour as if you have to really investigate every issue, but you don't have the time for that, do you? Or the, like, I know like time is precious, but, and I think we need to investigate, you know, if there is potential issues there, but I think, you know, it becomes unmanageable, doesn't it? And if you go down that route.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to weigh things up, haven't you? Is this just a routine misbehaviour? In which case you just apply your behaviour system, your sanction system, or it might just be a verbal reprimand, you know, don't do that again. That can often be enough, actually.
Yeah.
Versus something that's actually really serious that needs investigating, or an actual cry for help, which again needs dealing with and probably ends up becoming something of a safeguarding issue. Mm-hmm. I think it's using your professional nous to sort of judge what approach to actually take, rather than just it's all this or it's all that.
Aye. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just such a common phrase you hear, isn't it? It's like every single form of misbehavior is like some communication of an unmet need. I've just heard it so many times.
It does.
That's helpful, but it definitely does. It seems to be like maybe the more kind of like deeper line, like more serious behaviors that come across maybe not as frequently are. That's maybe where it's looks towards maybe an unmet need of something that's maybe happened to do with.
I agree. And I think there's a real danger as well that, you know, going with that line there that you've just come out with, that if we think that everything is an unmet need, we're actually in danger then of not being able to recognise where there actually is an unmet need and a real genuine need that needs our support. And I think that could easily slip through the cracks because we're just saying everything is. And I think it actually does the children with trauma and real deep-rooted underlying needs a real disservice, actually, because we are wasting our time and resource in the wrong direction for things that actually don't need that level of response.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. Okay. Right, so we've kind of tried to gear the questions around maybe common situations that maybe happen inside the classroom that, like, sometimes I think when I'm thinking back to my teaching that, like, if it's, like, a real serious thing that happens in relation to, like, poor behaviour in the class, like, you know what to do with that in terms of like following the behaviour policy. Like you can go and get that seen to if it's a real serious issue. But it's sometimes when I've like maybe started out or like I've spoke to colleagues and that it's the kind of the low level disruption that's maybe sometimes the most detrimental to the other pupils and stuff in the class. So I'm going to give you a situation that's maybe quite commonplace. If I'm just starting out and I've got like a class that's maybe got 7 or 8, maybe not just quite the 1 or 2, but like 7 or 8, quite a few kids displaying like kind of poor low level behaviour. What advice would you maybe give, kind of practical advice would you give to manage that situation so the better behaved pupils are not disadvantaged, if you like?
Yeah, you've kind of got the here and now and then kind of what you do in the future really with this. Mm-hmm. I think in the here and now, you've almost got to, this is a brave moment, you've got to stop your lesson. So if you had, you know, in inverted commas, and I don't mean everything should be fun as in entertainment, but you've got a fun activity you're trying to do with a group. And clearly you've got 7 or 8 pupils who are derailing it. I think you've got to stop the lesson itself there and then, address those behaviours with those pupils, and then make a decision of either you're going to continue with what you were trying to do, and then, of course, if that doesn't then work, you've got to do something else, or you move to, we're going to now do something in silence, and it's going to be copying out of a book. I think you've got to do something personally that makes a real point. Now, I appreciate you've got the issue there that you've got all these good pupils whose learning is then, you could argue, being derailed. But I think unless you make a stand there and then, the danger is that this becomes something that just erodes and erodes and erodes over time if you don't get a grip of it there and then. So actually, you're trying to do those 16 or 17 pupils that are doing the right thing a proper service by taking control of that situation. Mm-hmm. I also think in the here and sort of now, at that moment, you've got to really consider what your school behaviour policy is, which I know is a bit of a broad blanket line.
Yeah.
But if there is a sanctions system, either you impose those or you make it really clear to those particular pupils, we're going to be applying these to you if you don't behave. But that also goes to everybody else if you now decide not to behave.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue, though, moving forwards, you need to go away and really reflect on the systems, the processes, the routines that you have for your lesson. What's led to, and I'm not saying this is blaming teachers, but are there things within kind of your gift in terms of what you're doing, in terms of how you're structuring your lessons, how you welcome the pupils into the room, what's happening in the first maybe 10 minutes of your lesson? Is it a case, for argument's sake, that pupils come in as they wish and there's no real kind of starter activity and it's taking 10 minutes to settle the class? Or have you got something that's really clear cut and concrete? Are your expectations really explicit? Are the rules for your classroom on display? Are you using those as a script that you can then consistently and professionally apply to all the pupils. So it's about crystal clear clarity. Now, don't get me wrong, there still may be pupils that misbehave, even with all of that in place. But I think then it's about the consistency with which you apply your standards, your expectations, and your consequences and sanctions ultimately for the pupils, but then also the rewards and praise that you give to the pupils doing the right things in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's something I wish I'd kind of gone through my teacher, not like saying anything bad against my teacher training. I really enjoyed my postgrad and stuff like that. But see the whole thing about, we were told about like heavy expectations and stuff, like maybe have like some expectations on the board when the pupils come in, especially in a PE setting, because you're constantly dotting about facilities. But if we'd done more about even like sitting down as like a practical task and like thinking about classroom routines and stuff like that, I think it's so helpful to actually sit down and do that as a task.
I'm thinking about where the pupils are sat.
Yeah, definitely.
In, you know, are they sitting with their mates? Are they, you know, sat where you want them to be sat?
Yeah.
How have you laid the room out? Is the room conducive to you being able to teach the kids, or are they actually able to kind of, you know, get away with whatever? Mm-hmm. You know, that said, you might be teaching PE as an example. I mean, I taught PE for nearly 5 years on a kind of part-time sort of basis within those 8,000 subjects that I taught as a second-year teacher. But you had to have a real clear sort of set of systems and routines, because actually, yeah, I'm making you guys suck eggs here, but when you go outside, if you're teaching the kids how to throw the javelin, you've got a major issue if they're not, you know, on board, giving you their full attention, not messing around. There has to be a real rigidity to how you deliver that and execute it with them. Otherwise, it's a massive health and safety issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we had, you know, Tom Bennett on a while ago, and he was speaking about, you know, PE as that setting where rules are so important. So in a subject, if you really imply and reiterate the rules, then you've actually got quite a lot of good behaviour coming from the rules, just naturally from the sports and the safety
and
element.
And you're modelling it, aren't you? You're constantly role modelling and modelling what you want in PE. You have to, because you can't just say to 30, you know, year seven, to do the Maradona turn, and you've got 15 who don't play football at all looking at you going, who's Maradona? You've got to show them.
Definitely. No, 100%.
So Sam, see in your school then, do you like see if you're doing like any, I think, do you do like any inputs on like behaviour and stuff like that as like kind of professional learning and things like that?
Yeah. So in terms of how we structure our CPD as a school, we have a real interplay between obviously inset days like any other school would have, staff briefings. So our staff briefings are training sessions. We also use our twilight training time as well. And then we've got departmental or faculty time, which is every single week. Mm-hmm. But in terms of where behaviour fits within all of that, we always do kind of a reboot at key points within the year with the staff as much as we would with the kids. But at least three of our briefings out of six focus on behaviour, expectations, standards.
Yeah.
And to be honest, they're quite repetitious deliberately, because I'm trying to bang the same message and the same drum so staff know that actually is something I'm really taking seriously. That's what I want. I'm not just saying this week we're going to focus on this and we're never going to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your thoughts, Sam? This is a very specific question on a thinking space. So if you've got the policy and the behaviour isn't working in a classroom setting, do you believe in taking that pupil out and then they go to sit in another class of a different year group, obviously, so they've got nobody to bounce off of? I know in PE it's maybe slightly different in terms of how we would work that, but do you believe like a thinking space does work, or is it hard then to manage the pupil in terms of attendance if they don't go to that room, and how does it get managed? Have you seen any good ways of that getting done?
I think when you're kind of dispatching a pupil to somebody else's class, you've got to have everybody singing off the same page, and everybody's got to accept that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, the issue that you can get, and I've seen this, you know, in the past, is where you've got a slightly less experienced member of staff or someone who's perhaps not so comfortable with behaviour management, has a really difficult character put in the back of their lesson, and suddenly that pupil then derails their lesson as well. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that happen. I think you've got to think it through really, really carefully before you, as in where you're putting a pupil.
Yep.
My own preference and what we do as a school is that we isolate pupils with pastoral and senior staff in our offices. So you actually are, in the truest of senses, in isolation. You're on your own with an adult. And you're with them either for the lesson or the day, depending on what they've done. And you'll have your break and your lunch with them. Yes, you can go to the toilet. We're not going to deny you of that. but you're expected to get on with your work, and there's nowhere really to go. You are there with an adult all day.
Yeah,
and then I find that really powerful.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. So yeah, so there would be someone on every period, every lesson. There'd be an SLT on duty.
Yeah.
There's just so much like information, sometimes even conflicting information on like all these topics like behaviour management and stuff, isn't there? Like I read a thing about, it was in a book, what's the name of it? I can't remember the name of it, but it was talking about like if you're getting a pupil removed from your class, then that takes the credibility away from that class teacher. But sometimes you're like, or if you're getting a member of SLT to come along to deal with
the pupils. So, don't you?
I know that's it, but does that... What's your thoughts on that? Does that like take away the kind of the authority of the classroom teacher, or like, 'cause I've heard that before as well. I've read about that, but
I think it's far more damaging for a member of staff to leave a teacher to hang out to dry.
Yeah,
you know, to walk past the class as a senior leader and go, "Good luck. I'm off to go and have a cup of coffee now." I know I'm sounding really flippant here, but you know, it's almost like that though, isn't it? If you're just being left to it, because the expectation is, well, you've got to earn your stripes with the kids. And you've got to kind of self-regulate what's going on in your classroom, and there's never ever going to be any help. You are really leaving staff, you know, to hang out to dry. Mm-hmm. I don't think it sends the right messages.
Yeah.
I think the danger that you've got is a very quickly demoralized staffing body who think, what's the point?
Yeah.
What is the point of me enforcing the rules if actually I'm going to get pushed back by the kids to the point where they're rude, abusive, potentially at his absolute worst, violent toward me. I know I'm being extreme here, but if you got back to that low level disruption question you gave me right at the start of this talk, you've got that kind of low level disruption that just continues to niggle to niggle to niggle, and you can't really do anything about it. It doesn't take very much for that then to manifest itself in other teachers if that's happening elsewhere, and you can suddenly get a clique of staff just saying this school doesn't take behaviour seriously.
Yeah,
and teaching such a small community, teachers talk. They know within a locality which schools do and don't, and you can find yourself in a situation where you've got a recruitment and retention crisis as a school, and that's dangerous territory to be in. I mean, from my own viewpoint on this is, I think that there is a moral duty on the part of senior leaders and head teachers, support staff, and it's no accident that the head teacher standards are explicitly clear about the behaviour, the culture, the climate, the ethos of a school being the responsibility of a head.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can devolve that responsibility to senior leaders, but somebody's got to take, you know, account for it and lead it within that senior team. Really, it should be the head, but you can have other senior leaders doing so. But I think you're sending out completely a counter message to staff if you're not dealing with stuff like that you cited. That's my view.
Yeah, I think I just started a new head of PE job. I was just thinking as you were speaking, like the low level stuff that you just see in corridors, it's like the decision I always get is like, do I get involved there? Because obviously I want to support the staff, but then you don't want to feel as if you are dealing with it for them all the time, as if they're not capable. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, I think it's like using your judgment, isn't it, based on how bad the behaviour is, I suppose.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I've, again, in the corridors, I've seen staff reprimanding pupils or correcting their behaviour. And I've kind of hovered back and thought, well, I'm not going to intervene because I don't want to undermine the teacher.
Yep.
But if they kind of give that look, and you know what that kind of knowing look is of, like, can you please intervene and help me here? Then you step in. So, I think using kind of that professional spidey sense is key here as well.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
But your very presence of just, I'm going to hover around while you're dealing with that pupil, hopefully is reassuring enough to the member of staff that you're there if you need them.
Yeah.
100%.
Right. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts on that question. I've just actually, I liked how you kind of broke it down into the here and now and then going forward and giving that kind of practical example of just like stopping the lessons. It's something that I find myself doing as well. Like I feel like something's like really not working. I'm just like, right, this needs to stop and just need to think about something else to kind of get to almost like the end of the lesson. Like you say, having that wee bit of reflection. I'm just thinking back to a lesson that happened not too long ago. Where I was trying to trust them to put responses onto like on the screen where they can all type their answers and it goes up and it just kind of went a wee bit chaos. So I was like, nah, I had to scrap it. So that's very helpful.
You tried it
and it didn't work, but hey ho.
Happens to us all.
Aye, definitely. Yep. But thanks for sharing that, Sam. That was great. Moving on then, thinking about the kind of the idea of scripting responses, another thing that I've kind of read about and kind of quotes on my own and kind of practice with it and seen a lot of kind of good ones, but it's just trying to get the habit of it. So I've heard it's like a really useful approach to take to obviously ensure you're consistent with your responses, maybe to help regulate your responses and avoid getting into arguments with the pupils to prevent them kind of escalating. So have you got any practical ones, like for maybe common situations that happen within a class, for example, late coming or low level disruption, or if pupils are trying to like argue back with you about maybe going to the toilet, something like that?
Yeah, so we, again, in my school setting, we've got what we call the classroom code of conduct, which is up on display in every single classroom. It's three clear expectations linked to our school values. And the wording is there for staff to be able to utilise. And hopefully this reduces for them cognitive overload in terms of, you know, thinking, what on earth do I say to this pupil now? Uh-huh. They can quickly glance at that, glance back at the pupil and be really clear. You aren't respecting me, which is, you know, one of our expectations. You were disrespectful to one of your peers. That's part of our expectations. You didn't arrive to lessons fully equipped and on time. That's our expectation. You didn't complete that work without distracting other people. That's one of our expectations. So what that allows is a depersonalization of the behavior. So you don't get that kind of really personalized attack on a pupil of you're behaving like, you know, and I've heard phrases like this in the past, you're behaving like a clown, you're behaving like an idiot.
Yeah,
you
know,
why can't you behave like your brother? You know, those kind of emotive types of phrases, mm-hmm. which then give you, you know, in retort from the pupil, quite an emotive response back, because it's something that's really personal about them, as opposed to the behavior itself isn't in line with the school, this wider entity. And I'm not trying to sort of absolve teachers here of responsibility, but it just allows that kind of shifting away from it being the teacher is to blame here for this in the eyes of the pupil.
Mm-hmm.
But also what that creates is a consistent narrative across your school, so that, you know, if it's lateness, punctuality, people are saying, roughly speaking, the same type of thing in the same way. Kids know, well, that's just what's expected around here. They're all going to be onto me about it, because that's what this school stands for. So we find having that up on display, reminding staff to use that wording, it is really, really powerful. We debated whether to have absolutely explicit scripts, you know, that are laminated in front of you. And we canvassed staff around this, and the feeling amongst staff was, no, we don't want this. We don't need this. We want the statements that you've got to allow us to have a little bit of fluidity within our own professionalism to be able to word it in line with what we're comfortable with as an individual person. And we saw that as a healthy compromise. Yeah. That's not as a criticism as schools that really do explicitly script. I've visited a number that do, and that works absolutely brilliantly for them. I think context is often key. Mm-hmm. Knowing your staffing body is absolutely critical.
Yeah, like
so.
I was just saying, like the idea of having like something on the wall, and it's like you can constantly refer to it, and they can't really. You can just like always direct them to that as well, and use that as a visual too. No, I like that idea.
So is it just as simple as like be responsible, give your best, be kind, or is it like kind of sentences?
They're sentences. So it's to respect the teacher at all times and follow instructions without question, which links to respect. It's to arrive fully equipped on time, with your uniform worn properly, homework completed, which links to aspiration. And then it's to resilience, apologies. And then it's to complete all the work to the best of your ability without distracting others, which links to aspiration.
Right, okay. Brilliant. That's good. Yeah, I suppose they're just hearing it from everyone, so it creates that, you know, feeling of I'm not getting away with this no matter what subject I'm in. Yeah, that's really good. Okay, moving on to the last question then, Sam, of the main part of the episode. We've thrown this one in, kind of changed it slightly. So lastly, what common advice is out there around behaviour management which you would ignore? Is there anything out there?
I would ignore, absolutely. I think the notion actually that there's two things I would ignore. One is that you've always got to pick up your own tab. I've seen that kind of floated around quite a bit. And I don't think that's always right. And that probably goes hand in hand with one of the previous responses I've given to you in terms of the questions that you raised. But there are times where you need support from somebody else. You've hit a glass ceiling. You need someone more senior to step in because a pupil is completely derailing your lesson. So I think that as a mantra is one I wouldn't subscribe to. Equally, I mean, there's plenty of things I think here. I'm just trying to not be too controversial.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I think that was why we put that one in there, wasn't it? There's some controversy.
I'll go with it. All behaviour is communication. I know we've already addressed that, but I would say be really careful with that, and be really careful with the trauma narrative. That is not to refute it, but I'll go back to what I said earlier.
Yeah.
I think we've got to be really mindful of that.
So what about if I give you an example of don't smile till Christmas? What about that one? What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's nonsense. I think that just shows you're not human. And I think there's a real danger with that you could just be too ice cold. And I get, you know, wanting to stick to school rules and being consistent with kids. But I think you've also got to show the human side to you and the warmth of you as a person, because they've got to buy into you.
Yeah,
I think the other two kind of bits I would be wary of are everything is just about relationships. Don't get me wrong. Relationships are massive. They are huge. Mm-hmm. But relationships don't just happen. Mm-hmm. Not every single one of the 30 pupils in front of you every hour, or indeed if you're a primary phase teacher from the word go, are all going to give you their undivided attention, their undivided trust. You've got to build that over time. But in order to be able to build that with pupils, you've got to have clear systems, clear expectations, so the pupils know what is and isn't permissible. And I think the other thing I'd be really wary of is that every single issue, problem has to then resort or result in a restorative conversation, which I know is pushed in some environments and in some schools. And I'm not trying to, you know, slam everybody else here that does this. I just, my own view, and I've worked in a school that actually relied solely on restorative approaches.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have somebody who is exceptionally well trained in how to execute a restorative conversation for it to actually have any real effect. And there's a real danger with a constant restorative driven approach, more so I'd say in secondary than primary, kind of positively spiking up in terms of behavior and then crashing right down when pupils realize that ultimately not very much is actually going to happen.
100%, yeah.
You need that interplay of the sanction has happened before that restorative conversation can occur. But I also think you've got to be really mindful of not every single situation warrants, needs or demands that restorative conversation. And it can be quite undermining for teachers actually to have to sit there in front of a pupil and in effect, you know, say, I'm really sorry, when actually the teacher's done nothing wrong. It's a kid that's fronted up to them or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Quite a bit in there, I suppose.
That's really interesting.
I'd be certainly cautious around.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teachers don't like that. From my experience, a lot of teachers don't like the restorative.
I think you're saying, but it's important to be like, we tried doing that in our school as well, and it was like, I was reading like the questions that you had to go through and stuff, and I'm like, you need to like remember them all, and it can sometimes sound like, not unauthentic, I feel like. It just doesn't really roll off the tongue, and it doesn't sound like a kind of natural flowing conversation.
I'd agree. And as I say, you need to have a small group or a senior leader really, really, really well trained in that and well versed in it,
yeah,
who knows when to apply it and how to do it properly. Otherwise, it just doesn't have any effect. When it works well, when it's done in those, I think, those controlled situations, it can be quite powerful. But you've still got the scope, I think, to make real mistakes with it as well, even then.
Yeah, you can overuse it.
Absolutely. So just giving a workshop to staff saying, right, you've had an hour on restorative conversations, off you go, good luck. I just can see why it falls flat on its face.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. Well, that brings us to the end of the main body of the podcast, Sam. So thanks very much for giving some practical examples in there and sharing your insights and your knowledge from your experiences that you've had in teaching so far, I suppose. So we'll finish off with the quickfire round of three questions. So just three quick questions off the top of the head just to finish us off tonight, all right?
No worries.
So number one, if you could have a giant billboard anywhere, what would it say on it?
Join teaching.
Join teaching.
Not enough people do. We need more people to join the profession, and it's a great profession. So yeah, join teaching. Be a teacher.
Yeah, good. Love that.
Brilliant. Number two, which people or books have had the biggest influence on your life? You can pick one of each if you like.
In terms of people, my very first ever head teacher. He's really influenced the way in which I view how headship and leadership should be done. and just had that real interplay. Sorry, this is one word answers, aren't they? But yeah, that real interplay between people's skills and the leadership angle, which I thought was amazing. In terms of books, Running a Big Ship is a fantastic book. And it's all about a captain from kind of the 1940s running this massive naval ship. But the lessons in there are just as applicable to schools.
So that's basically kind of based on leadership then, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Mainly.
Brilliant. Last one then. What one piece of advice would you give to a teacher looking to improve the behaviour in their classroom?
Take your time. Be reflective. Look at what other members of staff are doing. Ask for support. Ask for advice. And guidance, and never take it personally.
Yeah, but especially the last bit as well. I think that's what you can get bogged down on when you just start out as well.
Yeah, definitely. I fell into that trap.
I guess a lot of people will. Sam, thanks for giving up your time tonight to come on and chat to us. It was really refreshing to speak with you, and it's made another really valuable contribution to the podcast series. So thanks again for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Sam.
Cheers, gents.
Thanks again for joining us in this week's episode of the podcast. We hope you've been able to take something away that you can implement into your practice or life.
If you regularly listen to the podcast, then why not leave us a review to let us know how we're doing and where we can perhaps improve? That way we can take action and further develop the OBO podcast. Until next time, we hope you have a fantastic week. Take care.